this year. Isn't the growing season usually start middle of February, first part of February? It's been going all winter, never has slowed down.
I was in the Richfield Wildlife Refuge, and some of the area biologists asked me to help out with a workshop last week where they wanted to be able to narrow down the, you know, couple hundred weeds in the area to the couple dozen that they could really focus on, do their surveys, do their control, that sort of thing, because a lot of the, hey Bill,
hi,
a lot of the refuge staff are, they're more waterfowl experts or Columbia white-tailed deer experts. They're not necessarily weed people.
Right,
and
right.
So
no, I know.
I was with them for a couple of days last week. It was pretty interesting.
How are you doing?
They're definitely trying. They're definitely doing a better job there than they used to.
Yeah.
No question
right.
about that.
Got coffee in there yet, if you want it.
I've had a whole bunch of coffee this morning.
All right. All right. We definitely have a forum now. So.
Yeah, like I said,
well, sorry that I'm late.
Better late than never.
Well, get started in and going. Okay, we have a meeting at home, and next thing we know, is kind of going. What time is it?
No problem.
Yeah.
Well, we all just got here too, Bill.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't be away. Well, other than staff, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're on time.
I need to talk to you before we get done tonight.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. Yeah.
So one introduction's already been made.
Yeah, apparently. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and ask for a review approval of the minutes from July 17th.
Also move.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say. Okay. Now we'll give Justin maybe a minute to introduce himself from WSU.
Only a minute?
Well, you know, we got a big agenda. You guys can visit afterward.
So I started at WSU Extension as the Regional Ag Specialist in very beginning of July, July 3rd. And I worked with Cornell Cooperative Extension for 5 years before that. Went to school, did my graduate work at Montana State, and actually got some weeds background at Montana State. Before I started, I worked for a weeds lab, a weed science lab, and mostly cropland weeds, but I got exposure to wildland invasive weeds as well. You know, mostly in the Montana context, but, you know, a lot of weeds are all over the place. Spotted knapweed. I don't know, anything else you want me to bring to light?
Provide expertise as we roll along.
Yeah.
Do my best to do what I can.
Well, I'm glad you're on board.
Thanks.
Okay. This young lady is from...
My name is Hannah Mortensen. I'm from Plasmuth Farm, just north of the Richfield National Wildlife Refuge. And I'm just here to see what you guys are interested in. Take some notes.
Mm-hmm. Which farm is it?
Plasmuith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the name of it?
Plasmuith. It's a...
Reading Morgan's.
Name.
Yeah.
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 Maybe briefly... Talk about why you guys are doing the assessment of your weeds because of the wetland bank?
The bank, yeah. So we are a wetland mitigation bank, or hoping to be. And so we're looking at what weeds we have come in and what we're going to have to eradicate.
Contend with, huh?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Right. Coming down the river.
So well, and be there. Flying in, floating in.
Yeah. Floating in with the geese, something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
You bet.
You bet.
What was your name again?
Hannah.
Hannah. Okay, real good, Hannah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess I'm thinking number four takes a lot of time. Do you want to skip to that right away?
We can, yeah, because it could be quite a bit of a discussion. Yeah.
Right. Okay, let's move to item number four. I know that's an important one that you were stressing too. So we'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Casey.
Okay.
And let's get into that.
Yeah, so this is the main subject that I sent out in the email a week ago, kind of the meeting prep. And I've been thinking about this a fair amount, especially, as you know, I started as the coordinator kind of halfway through last summer and kind of was looking at the program, how it's working, what they've done traditionally. And then as we were going through this summer, thinking more and more about the need for a little bit of a direction change. Currently, we have myself as the coordinator, and we have one county employee who's a field inspector designation, one county employee that's a field tech designation working as a field inspector, and then one temporary employee. So we have essentially three field inspectors. The county's broken up into three areas, with myself taking all of the governmental and quasi-governmental things that are more coordination. So DNR, Refuge, Columbia Land Trust, things like that. Plaza Newman Farm, for example. And comparing that to what it was previously. So the idea is, my concern is that we're starting to lose our ability to really keep some of the weeds in check. And so a couple of examples would be, 10 years ago, we did a fairly admirable job, or approximately 10 years ago, let's just call it a decade or so, a fairly admirable job on Canada thistle. Was it all controlled? No, of course not. But, a fairly decent job. And then that's kind of slipped away to the point where we're really only looking at it where it's affecting, an organic crop or a crop that's for sale. And I really am starting to see the same thing with meadow knapweed, sample that Randy just brought in, and in some respects, tansy ragwort is starting to, be a little bit like that, where we're kind of overwhelmed with not enough staff to have enough time to get to all the people we need to get to. And I recognize those are weeds that you're never going to completely squash, but the less we have, the better. And so that's why I was talking about these three options, and I wanted you guys to look over them so that we kind of discuss a little bit different direction compared to what we're doing now. Because my concern is that weeds that are currently in low numbers in the county or even in the state, if we're not really going after those, they're going to be the next knapweed or the next thistle or the next tansy. And now we have yet another weed that could be a fairly expensive problem. So kind of keeping in mind the idea that the sooner that you get after something, the less expensive it is to take care of, right? So the term normally used for that is early detection, rapid response. It doesn't have to be called that, but the idea that the larger number of new weed species that we can identify, get after, and control and squash early in the process, the better. Now, the way the state terms that is typically, we would refer to those most of the time, that's a Class A weed, and sometimes they're Class B designates. It kind of depends. So the three options I kind of put together were, and of course there could be, other possibilities, and that's why I'd like to have a little bit of a discussion about it. Option A I put down as the attempt to return to what it was a decade ago. Now, this option would require a larger budget, which we currently don't have. And so you have to look at things more like the weed board going to the board of county councilors and saying, hey, this might be time for an assessment, or it might be time for an evaluation of the amount of money that comes in from the general fund, that sort of thing. And in this option, it would be the attempt to, or the design would be to get back to five field inspectors, each with a helper during the summer. So that would require increasing by two what we currently have in terms of field inspectors, and increasing by four what we currently have for temp staff during the summer. And it would also require two more trucks. So it's a fairly big jump from what we have right now, but that kind of gives you an idea of where we were 10, 12, 13 years ago. Option B would be, option B and C are more of a change in focus, but with the same staff that we have right now. So not necessarily requiring any more funding. So option B would be really using the civil infraction to the fullest extent that we can. And so the way that I figured would be the best to do it, and I kind of checked around with some different county coordinators, a couple of the counties east of the mountains do it this way, is that the weeds that we really want to make sure are controlled without question are given firm control by dates. So let's say tansy ragwort, for example. We could advertise in the paper, we could put signs out. Jerry had a good idea last year of these kind of a political road sign, tansy ragwort controlled by this date, you know, buy about 100 of them, stick them on roads, something like that. It would also, these firm control by dates would also make it a lot easier for the field inspectors, because they would go out, survey for tansy, send a kind of a one-time letter to each one of the property owners and say, yeah, tansy has to be controlled by, let's say, July 10th. And if not, you're going to get a civil infraction with a $500 fine. So then the calendar becomes a little bit more simplified. They're not constantly going back, trying to get in contact with a person, trying to, you know, kind of massage along a relationship and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit more cut and dry, a little bit more, in some ways, weed cop, which is not necessarily always the best thing. But the idea is that the staff we have right now could handle it, and then also everybody in the county has the same date. It has to be controlled by July 10th. And then that would, over time, you know, let's say several dozen people end up with a civil infraction and a $500 fine in 2018, everybody knows, hey, July 10th is the date. It's going to be the same date next year. People would start getting on board, and then it'll problem less. That's the general idea with option B. Option C is, again, the staff that we have now, so likely no additional fund needed, but it would be us taking Class A weeds and the Class B designates that are in very low numbers, like, let's say, policeman's helmet, but definitely not tansy, and we would actually do the control work for them. They would sign a permission for us to go on their property, similar to how we do the Japanese knotweed program now. A Japanese knotweed is, of course, funded by state grant from WSDA. And this, what I'm proposing as option C, would still be just the funding we have now through the county. And but the advantage to this option is that we would know that the weeds in low numbers that could potentially be the problem weeds in a few years are actually being taken care of, because we're doing it. And very few people would say no to, hey, we can control the weeds for you for free, or you could get a $500 fine, or we can control the weeds for you for free, or you can do it yourself. Some of them will do it themselves, but oftentimes they'll let us do it, and we're the experts and we know how to do it. We know what we can get done right. So that's the advantage to that one. The disadvantage is we wouldn't really have a lot of time for the common weeds. So something like tansy ragwort, it would be more of a one-time notice in the mail that says, hey, tansy ragwort is required for control, you really need to have it done by this time. And that would really be all that we would have time for, because we would be spending our time doing actual physical weed control on the priority ones. So those are kind of the three options as I could think of them that would be kind of the best way to go in a different direction from what we're going now, in hopes to, what I don't want to do is manage a slow decline to where we're, 10 years from now, we look back and say, hey, how come we didn't do something about this? And I'm not really very good at managing a slow decline. It's not my style. So anyway, those are kind of the three options. I'm open for questions, or just, I know there's probably a lot to discuss, so.
Option C, you would still do the signage?
The signage could be done, with all three of them, yeah.
Yeah.
I figured, I did a little bit of looking up. It looks like for the sign plus some sort of either staking or wire framing or whatever, it's about $4 a sign combined.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to look into what the current budget is now and how many we could purchase. But even if we had, let's say, 100 of them and had them kind of scattered around in different, you know, main arterials, I might even be able to
although they probably wouldn't. I mean, I know the DOT guys, they probably don't want us to do it on DOT because they don't want anybody to put signs out on DOT. But just kind of get them out strategically placed on county roads and stuff. And just a good reminder that somebody is paying attention to the Tansy. And we'd probably only be able to do it for just the Tansy now. And then maybe if it looks like it's effective in a couple of years from now, we can maybe do it for other ones too, as we have the budget. That's not limited to A, B, or C. That could happen in any case.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'll admit your option A. With the current status of our county councilors, I really don't think that's going to fly.
Okay.
I don't see them willing to put much of anything, any effort forward as far as finances go for much of anything except for for their pet projects.
Okay.
And I just, realistically, yes, I think we need to do, I'd like to see us do all three. That, we need the personnel to go out and do the job, and we need more personnel. You've got a big county to take and try and cover. Mm-hmm. And to take and say you're going to cover it with three teams and stuff is, you might as well, like my wife's grandfather used to say, he says, spit in one hand and wish in the other, and you see which one gets full faster. And, anyhow, so I don't see, I'd love to see us put in for it. Frankly, I just don't think it's going to happen and stuff. The one thing on option C, you're talking about controlling Class A weeds and leaving like Tansy go, is I'm just waiting for everybody to go, well, hold on a minute. I got a letter, and yet your guys were here and controlled this. I just see that a concern that would be problematic as far as them thinking that, well, hey, your guys came in and controlled the weeds, and now here I got a letter about Tansy and stuff. So anyhow, you can go ahead and put me down on the list for Tansy because,
That C option where we're doing the A's and the, and then maybe like, the B doesn't get some really low numbers, like a policeman's helmet is the example I think I gave, is that we would definitely have to advertise that, hey, this is the new game plan. Mm-hmm. We would need to have it on our website. We would need to have, maybe explain it in the literature or in the newspaper so people understand that that's the new direction.
Mm-hmm.
The disadvantage to that is that, in the letter that we would send to Tansy, a one-time letter, it would say, hey, this is the state weed law. You are the landowner. It is your responsibility. But if we were to advertise that we're doing the Class A and select, Bs, and that the reason we're doing this is because these are the weeds that we want to squash before they become numerous, the smart landowner is going to say, oh, well, that means they're not going to do anything about the tans. So it wouldn't take very long before they realize that we're not really going to find them for the tansy control. So there may be a little bit of an advantage in not advertising, if that makes sense. Because one of the questions I have is, how many of our landowners that control their tansy eventually by the end of the by the end of the summer, how many of them are doing it and they're busy, they got other things going on, they're working in Portland, they got kids in soccer, whatever, and they kind of almost just wait for our letter as a reminder, oh yeah, I got to do my tansy control. And so it'd be interesting to find out how many people do their tansy control after being reminded and how many people do their tansy control after getting tired of us giving them phone calls. And if the difference between the two is 100 parcels or fewer, then maybe there isn't a big difference. If it's, if it's more than that and the pressure that we put on them really does make a big difference, then we'd be losing a little bit there. So that's a good question.
Wasn't the subject breached one time about a countywide assessment to per parcel, whether
Correct. It's
a homeowner in downtown Vancouver or in the city of Ridgefield or in the county with 100 acres, the same assessment, whether it be a dollar per parcel or something that way, whatever happened to that conversation?
Yeah, so that was about a year and a half ago. And it was brought forth as a possibility. The
the county manager at the time, no longer with the county, kind of thought, okay, that does seem like something that might be a go. It was discussed a little bit. Kevin presented a couple of options of, like you're talking about, what if, you know, all parcels were the same amount, or if it was a small per parcel with a tag on of, you know, per acre, you know, different options. And then it was kind of all happening quickly in an attempt to make sure the budget would work for the biennial budget. And then it was kind of put on the wayside because it was determined at the time that wasn't required to make things work. But that's not the same thing as saying that it's not necessary for us to have good weed control. It didn't seem necessary for the budget at the time. The way that the state weed law puts it is that if the weed board feels that more funds are needed to actually control all the Class A and the B designates, because that's what the requirement is, then the weed board puts together a budget, presents that budget to the local legislative authority, in our case the BOCC, and then the BOCC has the option of, if they want to present an assessment or if they want to just designate more funds out of the general fund. So it's your guys' ability to say, hey, we need more. It's their choice to determine how it's going to happen.
Right, so, but I think that it should be, if there's a presentation made to them, that you should give them options mm-hmm. of what they could do to turn around and tackle that monetary commitment that they would be committing to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's, everybody uses roads and there's road right-of-ways. So every property owner, whether I guess you're a rental or whatever, has a responsibility to try and keep it up. They don't do it, but the weed board can, or they can turn on and hire out contractors or whatever, mm-hmm. but they need the revenue to justify it. And I guess I'm a property owner, but I wouldn't mind seeing it as long as everybody had to pay for it. Jerry takes care of the weeds on his place, so he's not really worried about it. And somebody, his neighbor next door, doesn't. But if everybody in the county, I don't know whether it's a 25-cent assessment or a dollar assessment per year with their tax statement, they'd never miss it, mm-hmm. but yet it would turn around and help this agency's coffers to turn around and do the work that Casey wants to do. And I'm usually not, I'm an anti-tax man, but I can see the benefit of this for everybody, and it actually would benefit the farmers too. Because you'd have more people to turn around and help do the controlling on the right-of-way stuff. And that was one of the comments I had with a coffee this morning, and I brought it up a little bit. And actually, I brought forward that assessment type thing, and they said, well, as long as they take care of the right-of-ways too, you know, the county right-of-ways, you know, that's the first thing that come out. Nobody bitched about the assessment, but they bitched about the right-of-ways.
Seeing we're controlling our weeds, and then you drive down the road, and here it is all up and down the road,
Or other individuals. It isn't, mm-hmm. you know, it's, that would be an undaunting task to try and cover, I mean, to eradicate them in the ditches. And then you come to a no-spray zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That the road comment reminds me, I've been working with the state, I can't remember his title exactly, but the person for Department of Transportation that's in charge of roadside vegetation and weed control for all of the state highways. And they've got a new program that they started last year, and they're kind of fine-tuning it, and I've been able to give them a bunch of input. And so what I'll do, because we're not going to have time today, but for the first meeting of next year, I'll kind of tell you what their plan is and how they're improving their roadside stuff too, because I'm not saying that the county roads are always completely clean, but we do a pretty good job on the county roads, and a lot of the complaints that we get are from either, you know, City of Vancouver or state roads, and they just don't realize that that's not our program. But anyway, I'll go over that.
There's thousands of miles of roads.
So that's...
Mm-hmm.
When are they putting the biennial budget together?
Yeah. We're supposed to start that process February, March of next year, start pulling things together, and then there's a series of meetings and target deadlines and things like that over
there. So when do they adopt it? They adopt it in July? Do they?
No, they'll adopt it in December. At the very end of next year, yeah.
So we have time.
But there'll be a couple of work sessions in there through June, July, that time frame.
If that was something that you guys want to do in terms of, like you said, if you have time, it definitely would be something we want to get started on early. I know that Denise Smee with Clark Conservation District was kind of going through a similar process. Theirs is a little bit different than ours. But they talked to a couple of the counselors, got a little bit of momentum, did a work session. Yeah, work session, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
Made a presentation. I was able to kind of sit in and watch that and see how that worked. And then from there, the BOCC can kind of determine, well, do we want to bring this forward to the public and have an open meeting? And then, it kind of goes through a process. So it does take, it's a good probably 5-6 month process. So it's...
here's somebody else.
Well, and if you were going to do that, present a budget to them, you'd need to get all those costs kind of lined up, like you say.
Right.
How much is it going to cost to add these additional personnel, the equipment? Okay, here's the basic. This is what it's going to cost, actual cost.
Right.
And then if you did the math on the tax lots, whether it's 2 bits an acre, you can see what it would take to cover that per lot or per acre, however you did it. And then if there's additional or whatever, but that would give them that option too, that here's what it would cost, and here's how you would cover it.
But like in Randy's instance, well, you got forest land, you don't have many weeds.
Right.
You got lots of acres.
Right.
But the weed problem is not a problem unless you clear cut. Yeah, then they'll pop up. Yeah, but otherwise they're not there. Well, we can't say there's none of them there. But
So what the how it's spelled out in the state code is that so let's say decide to request of the BOCC that we need to increase budget, and that those are the two options: increase from the general fund and assessment. Like Jerry was saying, we need to kind of a budget in black and white. This is what we need, and then it's the job of the weed board to actually determine how that assessment's going to be spread out. And part of that determination is based on how the land is used. So agricultural land versus forest land or whatever, it can be divided into, I think, there's about 5 or 6 different categories, and the rates can be different based on, though. Or it can be all equal. It doesn't have to be, but it can be different. And then that information is given to the BOCC.
The only question I have there, Casey, is the general public is getting a benefit, too, on the right-of-ways. Mm-hmm. And if you only went with land only, they don't have any land. All they've got is a parcel with a green lawn on it. Mm-hmm. But yet, they're driving the roads that the county has to maintain, that they have to have weed people out there spraying the weeds to keep the noxious weeds down. So there's got to be a benefit to those people too, somewhat. I mean, they're part of the equation. And yes. I think if it gets fairness a little more that way, if everybody's involved and nobody has to pay much.
Yeah. And that idea has withheld scrutiny over time, and that's partly why the weed boards still have what's called an assessment, whereas Clark Conservation District, when Denise was going through it, they no longer call it assessment. They call it something like taxes and fees or something. There's a different term, and the reason is because of what you were saying there, Lee, which is that everybody's property value benefits if noxious weeds are controlled. So the assessed value of everybody's property would go up if we had less weeds. And so the way you were looking at it there is exactly right. That's why it's called that. And that's why with the conservation districts, they're not allowed to call it an assessment, because It's more of a individualized, this property benefits based on this project, this property benefits. It's a little bit different, whereas noxious weeds spread to everybody, and so there's a value to everybody in plunking down that quarter or whatever it is.
So inside the city limits of Vancouver, is there any other agency or group that does what the weed board does on the county end of things? Is this the weed board cover the city of Vancouver, Camas,
yes,
Ridgefield, all of those?
We do, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just don't do their properties or their right-of-ways. So like on the county right-of-ways, what we do is, let's say, I saw meadow knapweed in Randy's field, and I was going to send him a letter. We would try to make sure that we got all of the meadow knapweed, tansy, etc., on the right-of-way cleared, because it would be hypocritical to send him a letter and we haven't done ours, right?
It's been that way. Yeah.
Once you get into like the state highways or the cities or whatever, those aren't our right-of-ways, and so we can't really do that. So we still have the weed board authority, the state weed law authority, to send them information, but we don't have the ability to do those right-of-ways.
So you can still send the state a threatening letter, huh? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good,
yeah.
Okay.
And we do cooperatively.
We did that one time for our farm. We did that, and they owed us money, and so we sent them a deal saying, you know, we demand that you pay this, or we're going to take you to court. Well, I'll tell you, we got, you know.
Paid pretty quick, huh?
Yeah. No, we got, you know, they called us back.
Yeah, you got straightened out. You can't do that.
I mean, it got their attention and everything, so, yeah.
But you can assess the people of Vancouver then, the citizens?
Yes.
The lots and everything.
Correct.
You can do that.
Correct.
Even though we don't take care of the city of Vancouver right-of-ways and stuff.
Correct.
Yeah.
And there's always the option. I mean, I don't know. It's something that we've looked into a few times here, and we've had cooperative agreements with some of the municipalities. There's always the option that if city of Vancouver, let's say we made a press and said, hey, you know, you guys really need to clean up your right-of-ways better. And they said, well, we don't have the personnel, and there's always the possibility of working out an agreement where they pay us to do it for them or whatever. I mean, those options
or
are
something.
There.
Yeah.
We've been doing that with the city of Camas recently.
Right.
An MOU or something.
Yeah. But having the assessment be countywide would provide us a little more opportunity to help the landowners within city limits of Vancouver or Ridgefield or Camas or any of those. Whereas right now, it's a little bit challenging for us to do that.
Do you have much trouble with that, needing to help people inside the city limits?
Well, as Casey was talking about, there are certain situations where we get grants from the state and we'll do noxious weed control on private property owner, you know, on their private property. Most of the time, it's just sending people letters and saying, you need to control your weeds. I think this option, the assessment, would provide us the opportunity to set foot on property if they were willing and do the control for people a little bit more frequently and not just within county jurisdiction.
On back to that deal of setting foot on people's property or whatever, is it still the process that we really can't do much unless you can see it from a county road?
Yeah. Well, that's been our policy for several years, based more on it's more been more of a county decision. So, in terms of the county lawyers, etc., said, hey, this is the best way of doing it without, you know, potential for lawsuits or different things like that. The way that the state law is written is that if there has been a previous report done where we know that the weed is there, then if we can just walk right across the person's property and into their backyard if we want to, or if it's suspected or reported by a neighbor or whatever, then you can just go ahead and do that. I doubt very many inspectors that are county employees working for different county weed boards actually do that, because you're trying to respect people's private property rights. Even though the state law says you can, that's a real touchy area that could involve shotguns and things like that, you know, so you don't want to.
I realize, but I guess I get frustrated because, you know, I mean, a quarter mile from the road, you're not going to be able to see that tansy growing until it's too late. Yeah. And even then, you know, a quarter mile from the road, whether you can see that tansy or not, you know, I guess I'm a little frustrated by it because, you know, we've got, like, you know, in our case, we've got lots of neighbors, 20-some neighbors around us. And you know, virtually none of them do anything to control their weeds at all. And we are just really suffering with it and stuff. So anyhow, just frustrating.
Yeah, that would require just a change in policy, you know, on the county level. The state allows for it. You know, of these three options, A, B, and C, with A and B, that's really not going to change that county policy. With C, we might see some benefit there where if the public knows that for the, you know, the class A's and the prioritized B designates, that we're doing the work for them, and the neighbors start talking to each other and say, hey, you know, I had this giant hogweed, it was a real pain, my grandson's arm got burned, the state or the county came out and did it, looks like you might have some too, you know, you're just talking over the fence line, home improvement style, you know, and now that neighbor invites us on their property, and then the next neighbor, and so I can picture it that over a few years, we would actually be able to get farther and farther away from the roads and more into those properties that we haven't been able to currently see. That's one of the potential big benefits of us doing that weed control. Like I said, you know, there's some downside to that option as well, but even with more people and better funding, we're still not going to get too far off the roadsides. Unless there was, like I said, a change of policy at the county level, and that's something that we can definitely request. I mean, as the weed board, I mean, that's definitely pressure that we could put on.
The other thing is, then you can get an individual with 100 acres or 250 acres come take care of it for me, you know, and not take on the responsibility of the for themselves, because the county will turn around and pay for it, and right on the coattails of the county, and let the county do all the weed.
Yeah,
and it's not cheap to turn around the spray.
And you know, we've talked about it. Is you know, if it's a small,
it's just the small stuff.
Small stuff, we'll do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, it's
big things. Then the county shouldn't. But small stuff, I'm all for it.
Yeah,
as long as there's a total assessment. Mm-hmm. I just don't see where the farmer should have to pay for it all if it went. Mm-hmm. Countywide, then everybody's paying for it, and more power to the weed board of getting more personnel. Maybe you could double your request that you got there.
And, you know,
and then settle for half.
No. You know, and of course this whole thing of the personnel or people off the road. I'll put one name out there, and I'm sure you guys have heard from him this year. Is Victor Bloomquist.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping he would be here today. He said he would.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Well, I haven't talked to him for a couple months, but the last time he called us.
How many times did he call you?
How did he get your number?
How does he get my number? It's in the phone book.
He called the... Yeah, he's Victor. He's well known. Yeah.
Victor knows. I've known Victor for 40 years.
Victor has very good intentions. The way he goes about voicing his displeasure to us is not always...
tactful.
Not always something I want on that recording right there, but
that's going to be posted online.
Yeah, his, you know, he's not wrong when he complains about the tansy, and that even one tansy plant is going to, you know, cause issues. He's not wrong. It's a correct statement. It's just that we just don't have the capacity. For us, we kind of agree on, you know, based on the hours we have available and how bad the season is looking, we kind of get together as a group and say, okay, what's our threshold? And so if it's 10 tansy plants per acre, you know, and you go buy one that has a half a dozen, and you're trying to hit you're just going to overlook it. His statement isn't wrong. Well, those half a dozen in that acre need to be controlled now, because next year it's going to be 30 in that acre. And he's right.
Yeah,
it's just we just don't have the capacity.
If you control it by the 10th of July and cut it all down and it's all gone, but it comes back up again in September,
well,
and it's back blooming again.
Yeah.
On second.
Well, and what Victor was getting at was that was that, you know, he's done a good job of controlling everything on his property, and here these guys are 20 feet from his property are these, and they don't bother to do anything to control it at all.
Because we can't see it.
Yeah.
No, it's legitimate.
Has there been talk of aerial imagery being used? It's getting so popular in agriculture, it just kind of begs the question of...
Yeah, we've actually kind of looked at it a little bit, just because I've been following it as a curiosity. And our cooperative weed management area, every January we have a meeting where the three counties around Portland and our county get together, and anybody else who wants to, they can get some pesticide certification credits, and they go over different topics. And that's one of the speakers that we're going to have this year is a person that does with drones. They do aerial stuff with drones.
Yeah.
The thing that I've been wondering...
Confirmations of the alleged
situations
where, like, you get reported and you can't really go on the property. And
well, that's
like,
what
well,
we're
you
thinking,
can see a big patch of it there.
How close do they have to be for a 12-gauge to take them down?
See, that's what I was wondering. How expensive would that get? I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV, but the way I was thinking about it is that if we were on the right-of-way roadside and we pulled over in our truck or in the driveway of, let's say it's your property and there was a concern on the property that we can't see, and we just sent the drone straight up in safe airspace, we would probably be fine. You don't really want to be the governmental authority that's now spying on people's backyards, so there's that issue. Just like the, we have the right to go on their property, but we don't want to be over a hosing,
I was wondering
the
just
guy
about with existing
say, I thought it was a big mosquito.
Yeah.
You could see patches,
boom.
Certain perennials in particular.
It definitely works, not only just having the aerial vantage point, but even years ago I was at a weed conference where they, for certain weeds, they can actually tell by the spectrum of
the
light
spectrum
that comes off of them that is that exact species. So that ability is there. Now it's a little bit more expensive. A drone
might
be less expensive. But
you might be surprised what they're into now, because we had a guy from it's Sitsu. It's up the Hood River.
Is it so?
Yeah. Anyhow, he wanted to come and he wanted to take pictures of the corn maze for us and everything and stuff. And he was going through all the things that they can do now with the drones and stuff. And I was amazed. And
it's not bad. Anyhow, one of our partners down, I think it's either Tualatin or Clackamas, has already bought a couple of them, and they're going to start using them next year.
I was just wondering if the state law would evolve with the change in capacity with regard to that, just because it didn't exist a while ago. So hence that.
Yeah,
possibly.
If you can see from road law or rule.
So in my experience, I had a piece of ground we leased, and the guy owned it from Seattle. And anyhow, came down one time, and he brought an excavator in to clean the ditch out. And I ran over there, what are you doing, and everything and stuff. Well, next thing I know, a helicopter flew over, and this guy goes and pulls a .38 out of his car and starts shooting at the helicopter. I thought that was about the time I needed to leave and stuff. But, I mean, there are people that will do that. And stuff. So anyhow, at least a drone doesn't involve human life, at least.
And a smaller target to hit.
Yeah. But generally flying lower than
true.
But definitely the technology is there, because I know 30, 40 years ago we were flying circles on the east side of the mountains with infrared on private planes, flying the potato circles and everything, you could.
Yeah.
Infrared, look at the sprinkler heads and see which ones are working and putting out water and where the least amount of water was hitting the circles and everything else. And that was a long time ago and very expensive, but on a potato circle or whatever, it paid for itself. So you take a drone that have come down in price-wise, and then the technology on the computer system behind it.
The cameras and one thing and another are so much cheaper than what they were 20 years ago. Yeah,
so that price of technology is coming way down, whether it's legal to use yet, but it's getting there.
The time we've been talking about 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that sort of thing, and that's one thing that I meant to kind of try to build into these three, option A, B, and C, and I forgot, but one of the things to consider, because what I'm hoping before we leave today, that you guys have given me instruction on what you know, what we're going to be doing for the next 5 years. What we don't want to do is change our direction every year. And so that's why I wanted to take some time. It took me a while to, you know, get comfortable what the program's doing now, really figure out what all the weaknesses are. Now let's go a direction that we're going to actually be able to stick with for a few years, or at least 5 years. You don't want to change up on the public, because, like I said, we deal with weeds every day, but the public doesn't, and so they need to have, you know, a consistency. But the thing that I didn't build in that I want to is just this idea that, you know, 10 years from now, what is the county going to look like? You know, how many people now care about noxious weeds? How many people now are involved in farming and horses and cattle and, you know, berry farms or, you know, pumpkin patches, that sort of thing? And then, you know, what direction is the county going? And the county is going in a direction of, well, we're North Portland.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then what kind of weed program is going to fit that? There's two different things. There's what kind of weed program do we wish we had? You know, do we wish we lived east of the mountains where just about every family had a history of agriculture and everybody did care about Canada thistle? I mean, I've got a good friend in Battleground who lives not that far from the Gorge Amphitheater, you know, in George.
Well,
and they get fined for Canada thistle. I mean, we would never be able, you know. So, I mean, there's what we wish we had, and there's the reality of what this county is going to look like in 10 or 20 years. And so we need to kind of think about that too. I mean, it's on a certain level, unless we want to be the bad guys, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I took the job knowing that I was going to be the bad guy. But unless you guys want to be the bad guys, on a certain level, we have to realize, well, what is the public going to accept? And so that's part of the decision. I mean, it is state law. We can force them to do it. But is that what the community is wanting on a certain level? And I'm not saying we have to give in, but that's something to consider.
So. Well, on that realm, I think, well, my opinion, all the new people moving in probably don't know and really don't care. A lot of them are houses, apartments, maybe a house with a lot, that kind of thing. So they're not too interested. They're mowing their lawn, and they probably got a landscaper doing all their work and their flowers and everything, all that. See more and more and more of that. The ones that are controlling or working on it are probably the same ones like sitting around a table that have been doing that same thing for years, trying to do what they can. And each one of those is being blocked out. Like we look over towards Richfield area or Battleground, all that new incoming, those people, they're not interested in it. So as far as direction, we may end up a thing of the past. 10 years.
What I see that concerns me is all the 2.5 and 5 acre lots. The urbanization is one thing, but the 2.5 and 5 acre lots, and we've got a lot of those around us, and those just drive us nuts. Those are the ones that, you know, they bought this, oh, they're going to have their piece of the country, and, you know, they don't have a landscaper come and do it. And the rest of the property, you know, the half acre or acre where their house sits is one thing. The rest of the property goes to waste, and you sit there and you go, oh, brother, you know, it's the 30 Tansy ragwort plants or more. Yeah. And one thing, too, I think we keep going over this and everything, and we talk about weeds, and realistically, we should probably come up with a new designation. They're no longer weeds. As to the organic community, they're called companion plants. And so, you know, you should change your, you know, it shouldn't be called the weed control board. It's the companion plant control board.
Oh, I haven't heard that one yet.
We had a researcher at OSU that was, she was researching berries, and she was saying, she says, I'm having a little trouble with this, that, you know, that you know, they want us to refer to them. She was doing some organic berry research, and she said, they, no, they're not weeds, they are companion plants. And so, yeah, anyhow, that's just a point of interest.
So yeah.
A little bit. Kevin's getting the good.
Yeah.
So anyhow, but the 2.5 and 5 acre lots.
Yeah.
And I don't see that slowing down. And that does create a concern, because here's the other thing too, is okay, then we go from having Randy with hundreds of acres, my, you know, 100 acres or whatever, and you know, taking blocks out, but all of a sudden, and you guys aren't going to worry about controlling that. You're worried about the 2 and 5 acre lots, all right? Well, now instead of having 10,000, you've got 50,000. And all of a sudden, your staff is spread that much more thin, and everything, and that all of a sudden you go, geez, now we've got that much more to try and control. That used to be Bill Zimmerman's farm, and now it's 20 or 40 lots, and every one of them wants it controlled.
And we can't see it very well.
Right.
You know, you drive by a 40 acre piece, and you know, from the road, if it's a pasture or whatever, you can see it pretty well.
Yeah.
Now that's, you know, 20 houses.
Yeah.
Or whatever, or 10, or, you know, and they all have a fence, and,
right.
And maybe there's a gated community, mm-hmm. whatever, and yeah, we just can't get in there.
Yeah. So. And it just becomes that much more of a habitat for them. Yeah. So.
I think you mentioned up front that you can designate, if there was a fee per tax lot, you can designate those tax lots. In Randy's case or my case, where you got forestry, the ag forest would be mm-hmm. a fee, and this one would be a little bit more fee or less fee. So
yeah,
they all collect something.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a long history of land that's in timber production of having both lower tax rates and also lessened weed control requirements.
Right.
So let's say. Probably shouldn't tell Randy. He'll try to get away with it. But so with Randy, with a Class A weed, it doesn't matter. You have to control it. It's end of story. But for the aren't designates and the Cs, really after a clear cut, the control requirement is for 3 years, and then after that, it's no longer required. And so there are some. It's already precedent for timber being handled a little bit differently, Like I said, I believe there were about 5 or 6 different, so there might be timber specific, there might be ag in general, there might be, you know, the rural mm-hmm. lots versus the urban lots. Yeah, it's, right. that could be done and parsed out.
And I believe we're one of a minority of counties in the state that don't have an assessment. So there are multiple examples of how that assessment works. And the model with which they apply it in that particular county. So we can look at other counties that are similar to us that have a lot of urban area and rural mix, or just look at comparable size counties, that kind of thing.
Right.
Kevin, could you correlate some of those together and then just email them out to us so that we could estimate
that.
Them just like we did this proposal you brought today, and we could read through them and...
Right.
And
sure.
Come to a consensus, individually come to your consensus what would look possibly for the county here.
Mm-hmm.
Just for your information, now the county board has reconvened the current use symposium or whatever. I've actually served on that. Bruce Wiseman does. And the current use as it is in its state today is going to be changing because the legislature has made a change. And I do not know all the detail. I will after the 16th. But so it is changing, not so much for the larger individuals that have it. It's more for somebody that's got 10 or 15 acres in and they have somebody else farm it for them. And I talked with Mr. Bolt a little bit about it, and it's, you have to have documentation that you got the money. I have in the past always had the umbrella that covered those properties. Lewis is 25 acres next to me, or Gary Lottie 60 acres or whatever. All I had to do was show them my tax form. I'm trying to remember which one it is, what it's called, the farming one.
F.
Schedule
F?
Schedule F, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would actually take it to the county and then claim those parcels, but that no longer holds water with the new state WAC. So we'll learn a little more about that. So I'm kind of reaching ahead a little bit of the game because I don't know exactly what it is, but it is going to be a change.
We did have to go through a bunch of that on the farm.
Huh?
We did have to go through a bunch of that already on the farm. It's sitting in the county coffers right now, all the paperwork that started way back the first of the year. And then they wanted a Schedule F from the people that were using part of our farm. We were getting a fee for them taking some hay crop and trade and stuff like
said,
that.
And Mark said that's a problem
and
because there's a lot of bartering going on, and bartering doesn't cut it with the state anymore.
They don't like that.
Has to be cash.
Has to be cash.
Documented. Yep. Yeah. So how many bales, how many whatever.
And I think there are some ways to get around it, but that's to turn around and adopt some new rules for the county.
We ended up hiring some people to do some of the work for us, for the paperwork. It just, it's overwhelming on part of it, so you just need to, especially on the forestry ground, because they wanted to know the, not a tax lot for ag forestry, they want to know the square footage of the trees, if part of it was a little bit of pasture. So you had to do a square footage.
And open
it's
space.
It's miserable.
Open space, you almost have to have a lawyer put together your paperwork anymore to get into it.
Yep.
That's, I mean, it's a changing game.
I got one question on, if they went to the assessment, would it be on each parcel you own? Because out there where I'm at, I get assessed $20 each parcel for fire patrol.
Correct.
But as long as those parcels touch each other, I only have to pay it once.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
So then I have to fill out this form every year and send it to the DNR, and they pay me back for the ones I've overpaid them.
Uh-huh. We can look into that. I'm not sure the answer. That's an excellent question, though.
Because our property is much the same as what Randy's talking about. We have
four or five parcels,
I think.
But if they left the assessment small enough, $1 per parcel, you'd pay the $10. You're not going to worry about it. Right. If they kept it low enough to turn around and include every house that's over here in this subdivision too, then it would. I don't think you would have anybody complain.
On that fire patrol, it has to be a parcel that's less than 50 acres. And you're paying $20 on each parcel.
No, I have
the $20 per parcel gets would add up.
Adds up.
Yeah.
I think when we were looking at it a year and a half ago, and like I said, it was still just preliminary, you know, talk and stuff. I think we were talking about more in that $2 to $3 per parcel range. It's not. It wouldn't be a great amount. Now, that may have been just going above what we're currently getting out of the general fund. Whereas, if you wanted to go assessment, one of the advantages of assessment is that if it passes, and there is one, essentially you guys, the weed board, now is completely in charge of the budget.
Right.
It's the weed board's assessment. And so, do we want to go a certain direction? Does that mean we need a different kind of spraying unit or a different, you know, or maybe we wanted, so it could be equipment or labor or whatever. It could be over time this larger facility is getting run down and the county is going different places. Well, now the county weed board can have their own little office or whatever. I mean, you guys can determine those things. There's the downsides to the assessment as well. I just, like Lee said at the very beginning, a tax is a tax, So that I have, one of the things that I want to do, and one of the reasons I wanted to, obviously we don't know details of, exactly what it would be per parcel or whatever, but just looking at these three options in general so that I can start planning during the winter for next spring. And we can, have discussions through email or whatever over the course of the winter. Which of the three, is would you guys kind of be leaning towards so that I can kind of start planning that direction?
If it were me, I'd like to see all three. Because here's the thing. Several of them, okay, B and C mean you need increased personnel. So you go back to A because you're going to need increased personnel. And if you have increased personnel, then you can do, you know, you can do the other. And as far as, you know, getting something done effective would be all three. Yeah. And really cost-wise, the only real cost you're going to see is the option A. You know, actual dollars out. And then the other two can be, if you have the dollars out for the five inspectors, well, then they can do the control by dates, they can do the weed control on the parcels. So, yeah.
That's one thing I was thinking about. If I was trying to figure out if both B and C were possible without A. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, would it be possible if most of our actual on-the-ground weed control that we're doing for people, the Class A stuff, let's say we could get it done before tansy ragwort season, you know, and then still be able to do option B for tansy ragwort. Hey, this was your date. And I just don't think we would have the capacity right now. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right there.
And you know, you were saying look down the road 10 years, mm-hmm. okay? And honestly, down the road 10 years, that's what I see, is you're going to have a proliferation of these 2.5-acre lots. You're going to see more and more where they need to go in and be able to control small patches of weeds. These people with 2.5 acres, you know, they're so overwhelmed. I wish the county would do away with that whole thing.
The daughter wanted a pony. They decided to take an urban lot. It just didn't work. Yeah.
And it didn't work out. And boy, do you know how much, you know, you wouldn't believe how many times we have people come and they go, do you know how much work that is? And it's like, really? You're coming to me and asking me if I know how much work it is. And yeah. But yeah, it just becomes overwhelming. And so that 2.5 acres just becomes another acre and a half or 2 acres of just weed patch and stuff. So in my estimation, down the road 10 years, you're going to see more and more of that. Yeah. Even though we see the increased urbanization, you're going to, yeah. You can't pave as fast as they're going to make 2.5 acre lots. So, yeah.
The paperwork that we did on the farm that caused stress, I mean, tremendous stress on the owner of the farm, it was toss it. Do I just give up having farm? And it goes to the, I think we're down to 10s and Ag Force 40s and stuff like that. Just give it away. Chop it up. Mm-hmm. Just be done with it. And then you've got more of those small lots. You've got 10 acres or 2s or 5s. But
I don't think there are any more 2.5s anymore. Are there, Bill?
I don't know. I
don't think only they, in rural centers.
Yeah. In a rural center.
Or if you do the cluster lot type of subdivision.
Mm-hmm. Clusters are acre, aren't they?
They can be 1-2 acres, right?
Okay,
now.
They? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I don't know. Yeah. Then the remainder parcel.
Yeah, then the remainder parcel. And that can be, unless somebody's managing it, that can be a real problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, mm-hmm. It's. Okay. I'm not sure this county is trying to stay country anymore. No. So not with what's mm-hmm. going on right now. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
But still, 5-acre lots.
Yep.
Then they become that 4 acres of you know, weed patch. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't even know if urban sprawl is the right term anymore, but as that keeps happening, the kind of setup that you have where you have a working farm, but it's also a little store and there's the stuff for the kids and everything, that's going to be more and more in demand, actually. Over, mm-hmm. you know. Now, the question is, where's the land that's actually going to support it?
Right.
You know, as mm-hmm. you know, as you get moved around. But I'm not saying that we need more competition for you or anything, but that idea is going to be more.
Everybody keeps coming out and saying competition, and it's like, I'll tell you what, we are so overwhelmed as it is.
That it can. Yeah.
You know, and
competition's good.
Maybe if I could take a half a minute. Oh, anyhow, is you know, we belong to the Farm Direct Marketing Association, and I'm amazed at the places we tour every year, and you sit there and you go, wow. For instance, Green Bluff out of Spokane. They have 6 miles of roads. Right now they've got 52, last we heard they had 52 farm markets on those 6 miles of roads. And the problem they have is that it's accessed by 1 2-lane road to the plateau at Green Bluff. And you know, you sit there and you go, wow, you know, but that's what people are looking for. Yeah. And this idea that, gee whiz, it's going to be terrible competition. Folks, we have 440,000 people here that are looking for food. And they need food every day and stuff. So, you know, to take and think, well, it's increased competition is, nah.
Yeah.
So, but anyhow, back
help.
To our...
You huh? need help.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, anyhow, but we back to our deal here
So I've got you down for ideal choice would be all three.
All okay. three, yeah.
How about you, Randy? What's your what are your thoughts
towards what Bill's talking? Same. Makes sense.
Okay. Lee?
I agree. As long as it's an equal assessment. And the agricultural community, the real agricultural community, doesn't get burdened with...
Hammered with the whole thing.
We're hammered with the whole thing.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Jerry?
Yep, same. I mean, at least on A, we need that some numbers on that to see where we're going there.
Yeah.
But okay. And it to me, it includes B and C, you're right. But okay. Show us some expenses and then what the assessment might be or what some of the other counties have done in the state. Give us some idea where that's headed.
Pull that together.
Yeah.
So what I would like to do, because... So we'll start down the road for trying to get the assessment in front of the BOC and the work session and get that whole process going. But as we were talking about before with the bienniums and the way the budgets work, that wouldn't, you know, that's not going to happen until at least the 2019 growing mm-hmm. season.
Right.
So what I'd like to do for next year is try out a couple of these concepts. With our current staff, which means we're going to have to do a little bit less of what we're doing now. But I'd like to take a small handful, four or five of the Class A species or the B designate type stuff, and start doing some of the control work for some people with the weeds we have very little of, and kind of start going through the process. We'd be working out some kinks, you know. Some of the landowners getting used to that idea, so I'd like to do a little bit of that, and then definitely like to do the mm-hmm. the political sign type thing with Tansy. Do you want to try to do Tansy with a control by date next year? Do you want to try to do, let's say, July 10th? We get it in the papers. Everybody has to have it July 10th. And try to do that where we're, because what it would require is I would need to pick the weed species that we know that our effective control work would be done before then. And there's several like that are spring control,
mm-hmm.
right? And then so that we're free of that part where we're doing the control work within, so we still have several weeks before July 10th so that we can start that ball rolling in terms of the actual field inspectors now transitioning from doing the work to, you know, driving the roads and contacting the people. And so... I mean, we'll see if it works. But yeah. In a way, I don't want to use 2018 as an experiment because, like I said, it's really important that we not change our mind all the time.
Yeah.
But if we're going to kind of head that direction, I would like to start heading that direction, if that's okay with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've got some ideas where those target areas might be, where you need to, after these, working towards Tansy, you've already got the ideas.
Yeah, that's one advantage of our history. Yeah. Right out?
Yeah.
Right out south, Randy's place.
Yeah.
No.
I'm on two roads. You could put two on my place, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
on my dead-end road.
Okay.
Okay.
Related to that, with the history that we have of knowing where the different populations are, another thing that I'll write down as a... update for you guys for the first meeting of next year is we're switching from our current mapping and data system to, well, almost certainly switching, there's a small chance that we'll stay with what we have, to a different system, either a collector or another one, and so I'll kind of give you an update on
that's in the county they're doing that?
No, just us.
Yeah, oh, just weed board. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we can hey, I work 8 hours. We can stay here as long as you guys want. But and Jerry, of course, it's up to you as the chair. But one thing that I think we definitely should iron out is next year's calendar.
Okay. Let's go to item six.
We have been doing quarterly meetings, mm-hmm. and we can continue to do that. We can have them every other month. So the frequency is up to you guys. But then also, let's make sure we get at least the first meeting of the year down past so that we can get it on the, you know, it's a requirement to get it advertised, and that way we know the next meeting for sure. So,
Casey, if I can go back to your deal there, your tansy, is I assume you're going to try and get a public service announcement or get a deal in the paper?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely.
All right, to help. Of course, how many people get the paper anymore?
See, that's one of our struggles, is not a lot of people read the paper, and then also a lot of people don't have home numbers and their cell phones aren't listed. So sometimes it's just a matter of the reason the weed control didn't happen is we just were never able to get a hold of them. It's not necessarily because they were being negligent. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they are being negligent. Mm-hmm. But
most everybody in North County gets a reflector.
Yeah.
So you, mm-hmm. never, yeah. You don't read it always. I don't.
I don't either.
I'm old school.
I use it for other purposes.
Well, I read the Columbian, but yeah, the reflector, it's old news by the time the reflector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once anyhow.
Week, yeah. But yeah, we could do a it's combination cheap. Of newspaper, website,
mm-hmm. would anybody
and then all the social media stuff news? That's out there these days. We could push it that way as well. And then
right.
these signs on the roadside and just kind of do a media
blitz. Yeah, it's
kind of like tax time. You know, mm-hmm. yeah. October 31st.
Yeah.
You know, or.
Yeah.
Katie just had a good idea, but she didn't speak up. Maybe you guys should all be on the news, like a good, like, you know, King 5 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Or wait, maybe that's a Seattle station.
But yeah, that is. Yeah. Seattle, yeah.
You guys could contact Channel 8 and just have them come out to your farm and just be like, you know, just so you know, we are going to be on the lookout.
Yeah, come out and look at my weeds out here.
Well, not yours, but.
All these weeds behind me are the ones you need to watch for.
Yeah.
I mean, would you guys be interested in doing that?
Well, I could, yeah. I've been on the TV before, so yeah.
Because I think that would actually reach a lot more people, because I do watch the news in the morning, whether I like it or not.
But the trouble is, okay, you watch 8, and I watch 6, and 2, and 12, and yeah. So, well, there's 12, 8,
12,
6.
12 at 10 o'clock at night.
Okay.
Yeah. we can put out a, what's the office, PIO, Public Information Outreach, where we can put out a statement saying this is what the direction is, and they throw it out there, and if the media wants to cover it, I guess that's their option, but we mm-hmm. can do that too. So traditionally, we would have the first meeting of the year, either the last week of January or the first week of February. That's when you guys have been doing it, because that gives us time to see the new state weed list and to ratify it. And one thing to consider, obviously it didn't happen this year, but the way the state law is that the first weed board meeting needs to be within 30 days of newly elected weed board members. In this case, nobody's new, so it's not that big of a deal. But looking at next year, our last meeting of the year is today, December 4th, but next year it's going to need to be kind of timed within a certain window of time of the people whose terms are expiring. You know, there's like a window of time there, and then like I said, 2019, the first one will have to be within 30 days. So we'll have to kind of keep that in mind as we put it together. So the first meeting, what are calendars looking like for?
I don't have my new calendar, so
we going with Mondays.
That's what we've been doing, but it doesn't have to be. It's completely up to you guys.
I think that's the best day. It doesn't. The only reason I say in that is it's always been a slot there, so you kind of look for it being on Monday. Is that fit for you, Randy?
Myself, I'm looking at January 22nd because the next 2 weeks I'll be gone.
Okay. And the Monday before that is Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
Right.
22nd works for me. Keeps it.
Yeah.
Does that, or I got to go.
Does for me till I get home.
Yeah.
January 5th or February 5th.
February 5th, I'm going to be gone.
Yeah, I'll be gone. Yeah. 22nd.
Okay, so what we'll do is we'll call it the 22nd, and then we'll send out an email. Katie sent out an email here in the next couple of days, just so you guys have had a chance to look at your calendars, and then if you can make sure to fire us back an email if for whatever reason that doesn't work.
And then I would suggest after that we try for the first Monday of the month for the next three consecutive meetings throughout the year.
Try to keep doing that.
That kind of just like...
Yeah, sets it up.
Sets it up.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And do you want to keep doing the quarterly? So last year it was, you know, that beginning of February time, and then I think it was April, July, and then December. It's not exactly quarterly, but
right.
Mm-hmm. Has that been working for you guys?
Mm-hmm. Well, more than anything, I guess looking at what we're doing is more than anything, what's the weed cycle look like? Then yeah.
Yeah.
So we want to hit before that July 10th for sure.
Right.
You know, and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of stuff. We want to be sure to, yeah.
And then if we end up, if as we start gaining traction with the assessment, like I said, we'll put together, you know, what that would look like, what a per parcel thing would be, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And then as, at a certain point, if we're going that direction, then I'll craft a letter that you guys would need to review and approve that would get sent to the BOCC so they know that that's what we're trying to do. And so it needs to be, you know, an official letter going towards them. And there may be a need to, you know, have another meeting that isn't in one of these four. If there's mm-hmm. something weird with the timing or something like that. So just be aware of that. But it could be something as simple as, you know, I drive around and meet you guys for coffee or whatever and we can do something like that too.
This assessment, one thing on it too, I want to be careful on our timing and dates. When would that money become available? We're talking, it won't be 2018. Kevin, do you know, would it be actually available in 2019 or does it have to be
I would assume
collected and then not be available till?
Yeah, there's going to be a lag time.
Yeah.
Because if it's paid, you know, with property taxes or whatever and it's agreed towards the end of 2018, you know, most people don't pay the property taxes until towards the end of 2019.
I would
assume, so it's
going
to be some lag.
April of 2019 would be the soonest.
Okay, all right. So we don't get our hopes up, I guess, is what I'm getting at, yeah.
The only thing is the county could turn around and do it and upfront the money.
Yes.
To us,
yeah.
Because they'll know they'll get it back.
They'll be getting it.
We would go on like a line of credit from the general fund until that started rolling.
They can do that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Because April, if we waited till April, it would put it getting a little skinny on trying to get people on board and one thing or another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The 22nd was what time?
9 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't make it 9:30.
No, we ran into problems with that before.
Okay. Well, you ran into problems with me.
Yeah. Well, I think we changed it on you once. And then I think
send it to Bill and it's 8:30.
Yeah. Randy called me this morning to remind me.
I wanted to just
or Casey off, yeah. did, I'm sorry. Casey did, yeah. Yeah. So, anyhow.
What's your next priority if we knock out a couple of 5-minuters?
Are you okay with time, Randy?
You guys good?
Time-wise?
Yeah.
I'm fine, too.
Yeah. A little bit better.
Yep. I guess maybe an update on... So, last year, we sent to the state some of the weeds that we wanted to designate slightly differently. So, number two.
Yep. Okay.
So I put that Katie did. Sorry, I put that packet in there. It says a concise explanatory statement, which I chuckled because it's 9 pages of concise. But her email to me is probably a little bit easier, so I'll just read it. This is Allison, State Weed Board Coordinator. She says, and I don't know if I put this email at the back end of it or not, but. Says, thank you for submitting requests to amend Class B designations in Clark County for 2018 noxious weed list. The State Weed Board adopted two of your requests, namely to designate policeman's helmet as a Class B designate and to undesignate a yellow nutsedge, as they felt that the current distributions in Clark County were appropriate for these adjustments. However, they did not adopt the request to undesignate Eurasian water milfoil or to do a partial designation on indigo bush. And we had a phone conversation. She kind of explained the reason for that. But what they want to do with both of those species is kind of get a better idea of what the other county's distribution of those two weeds are, and kind of do it all or nothing across the entire state. Because both of them, really, the Snake and Columbia River are the main source of both of those two things being spread. Mm. So they just kind of need to think about it some more and maybe do some studies. If I had read the next paragraph, I wouldn't have had to paraphrase it. That's what she said. Let's see. She said she will be sending out information shortly about the 2018 noxious weed list, which was adopted November 29th and goes into effect the first of the year. So those were the two main ones. So the reason we wanted to designate Policeman's Helmet is because we've only got it in a couple of different locations. We've got this is one of those that I'm hoping to get permission to do for the property owner because it's growing as an emergent species or real close to the water. And so we would have the expertise and the better ability to do that. Right now it's not designated, so it's one of those that we would have to adopt it as a weed of priority. And then the reason that we wanted to undesignate the yellow nutsedge, if you remember, is that it's just pretty much any sand that gets moved around, whether it's been dredged from the Columbia or from a couple of the out, it's already in there. I mean, it's all over the place. It's not that it's not a problem. It's just, it's not something we would ever be able to to really control, enforce or anything. So.
Have you used any products on it?
Yeah, the sedgehammer works pretty well. And people have called, they've got it growing in their lawn or in their bark mulch because they just redid their front yard or whatever, and I'll recommend that sedgehammer, and it is pretty effective. It's not necessarily, it's a product that we would all be comfortable using, but the average homeowner is not necessarily, that comfortable. And I also don't think it's got an agricultural label to it. I think it's more turf and ornamental.
Dual is supposed to be the one that's really effective on it.
Okay.
Fall applied.
Okay.
And stuff. Yeah.
Lee, I think, no, it wasn't you. It was Dobbins. There was a field in Ridgefield that Dobbins was, we were certifying for weed-free straw. And you could tell that they had put in a new road. As you're going down Pioneer, the first roundabout, if you go north, and there's new developments and stuff up there, you could tell that as the...
Not the first roundabout.
Sorry, second roundabout, yeah.
Yeah, first roundabout, don't go.
Goes nowhere, yeah, yeah. Is it 41st Avenue, I think it's called?
Yeah, 45th.
You could tell as the developments have been encroaching and then putting down new roads and new foundation stuff, they're bringing in this rock and the sand and everything, and the nutsedge is just, like, moving right into the ag field there. And so we had to carve out that area and say, you can't call that weed-free, but it's really hard to manage. Like I said, it's already kind of everywhere.
Okay. Item 3 or item 5?
Item 5 we can probably wait on. It's just, I was just, we can wait for the January meeting, but just so you guys are thinking about it, just, do we want to start promoting weed-free hay and straw just because we had a lot fewer people involved in the program last year, but you guys can kind of think about that.
Casey, one question on weed-free straw. Okay, we get a lot of straw out of Oregon for our pumpkin patch. Does Oregon use the same colors or anything, or designation for weed-free straw?
It's the same program because it's they're national standards that the states adopt, so the criteria would be the same. I believe they still use the same purple and gold twine.
Do they do?
They do.
Yeah. Do they? Okay. Because I haven't seen it. So okay.
Well, there's also the option of just having tags, so they can just use the regular orange twine and just put a tag on the bale. Hmm. Of course, that's a lot more effort.
Okay.
But that is an option as well.
Hmm. Okay.
A lot of the straw out of Oregon is weed free because it's certified seed, but it hasn't been certified weed free.
Right. Well,
So. The seed companies go out and check all the fields and that, and it's certified seed, so they can turn around and sell it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't got the weed-free certification. Would be very simple to do. And I used to, years ago, get it, and
from out of Oregon, and it was beautiful stuff. There's no, no weed in it.
Well, the only weed in it is then I have people complain because the residual wheat comes up.
The grains routes.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, there is very little certified wheat-free straw left.
There's very little straw left.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Trying to find some grain straw as opposed to having to go grass straw.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Nobody puts small bales up.
No.
So, in the grass straw, other than Dobbins. Dobbins did, but but nobody messes with it. It's too labor intensive.
Okay, I think item three is all we got left.
Yeah, so we don't spend too much time. I know Randy's got an appointment to go to, but they're just right there in your packet. There were two Class A weeds that are just not that well known in the county that you guys might not have run into yet, so I was just kind of giving you a heads up. One of them is Big Head knapweed. We have two parcels. It's the same infestation. It's not that far from Battleground Lake State Park. The road that cuts across from the substation there and heads over towards Battleground Lake State Park by the church. One of the property owners did their control work, and the other one we just haven't been able to get a hold of yet, but that's a Big Head knapweed. It's a very pretty plant, but some of the same issues as some of the other knapweeds. And like I said, just the two parcels in the county. We had it, one parcel in Ridgefield about 3 years ago, and the people did their control for a couple years and nothing came back this year. So it looks like maybe it's one that doesn't have potentially as long of a seed bank and it's a little bit easier to get after. And then the other one is what we've been calling oblong spurge. Some people call it egg leaf spurge. Also got a print out there for you. Like a lot of the other spurges, it can be difficult to control. A little bit of a waxy leaf. It's got the latex type sap that can kind of mess with your eyes and your nose and stuff if you get it on you. Not really growing like some of the leafy spurge type stuff that's really a scourge east of the mountains, but we also don't want it to get to that point. Justin, one of our field inspectors, has been kind of the real expert. He's the one that's been noticing most of them. I'd say there's about 12 to 13 parcels that have it. Most of them are in the southern part of the county, and most of them are in bark mulch. And so we're wondering if we need to get around to some of the, not to single out H&H, but some of the, the wood recycling or the bark mulch type stuff, and just see if we can't look around and see if we can find where the source is. But not all of them are in landscaping, but most of them are. So that's kind of our suspect of where that's coming from now. And there are a lot of ornamental spurges. I mean, they're very popular in front yards around, but this isn't one of them that's normally used that way. So, so anyway, just kind of a little bit of an update on
a couple of the newer ones.
So those are not necessarily new listings. They're just ones that just something to watch out for.
New to our area.
All right. Anything else from the board? Other than that, January 22nd at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
We'll
let you know. We'll try to get the room reserved as soon as possible. There's always, every once in a while it's an A1 instead of B1, but we'll try to get it reserved real quick and let you guys know.
So let us know on that, and then pick some other dates for us to look at for the other three times. Because we were May 15th, July 17th, December 4th last year.
We'll send those out.
Okay.
You guys can, I've got this going on, and we can kind of move those around a little bit.
All right.
Well, thanks. I know there's a lot of
appreciate the work.
A lot of stuff this time, but I appreciate you guys helping out.
All right. Well, we can adjourn the meeting and let Randy get to his dentist appointment.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you got a dentist?